We're live and we're local. This is a Juno afternoon on Wednesday, April 25th, 2018. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, singer, songwriter, poet, activist, teacher, and lifelong Alaskan, Libby Roderick will preview her Friday concert. We'll learn how to design structures with a super maneuver in mind, study the art of improv, and discover fashionable leather bags made by hand right here in Alaska. Those interviews, national native news, bird note music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Taking a look at weather. Rest of today, rain with highs in the 50s. Tonight, rain likely lows around 40. Tomorrow, rain with highs around 50. National native news is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Alaska, a native village is partnering with a local conservation group to collect water quality data. The project is to test water before a large-scale mine is developed. Daisha Eaton has more.
Kimberly Strong, tribal president for the Chilkat Indian Village of Klukwan, says ensuring that the Chilkat River, the traditional subsistence fishing grounds for her people, remains pristine is a top priority for her community. That's why Klukwan decided to partner with local conservation organization Takshinuk Watershed Council to carry out baseline water quality testing.
We felt that there should be some testing done by non-mining interests.
The state of Alaska does not collect baseline water quality data during mineral exploration, nor does the Bureau of Land Management. The Canadian company Constantine Metal Resources has been exploring at the nearby Palmer Project, a potential hard rock underground mine, for years, and is collecting data for its own uses, but treats the information as proprietary and has so far refused to make the data fully available to the public. Strong says that Klukwan is committed to ensuring that their traditional subsistence fishery remains robust, as well as the regional economies of commercial fishing and tourism.
We need help with protecting the Chilkat River. And though we've been doing the water testing for the last year and a half, it's still not apparent to everybody who lives in our valley the importance of the Chilkat River as a renewable, sustainable resource.
Derek Poinsett, science director with Takshinuk Watershed Council, is coordinating the water quality testing partnership with Klukwan's environmental department.
The plan now is to try to go out four times a year and to try to get the whole range of weather and flow conditions represented in those samples. And we need to go for 5 years to get a good solid set of data that then would be useful.
He says all information will be shared publicly via EPA and DEC online databases. In order to fund the endeavor, Takshinuk Watershed Council and the Chilkat Indian Village of Klukwan are soliciting donations from the public. In Haines, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The Navajo Nation is commemorating the Treaty of 1868 with a number of events this year. The treaty signed by Navajo leaders and the U.S. government allowed Navajo people to return to their homelands after imprisonment at Fort Sumner. Navajo Nation Vice President Jonathan Nez says treaty activities are telling history from their lens.
It is now an opportunity for us as Navajo professionals to retell stories. They're our way of life teaching from our own perspective. We have a lot of stories, a lot of these teachings that our elders have, and we need to capture that information so that we can hand that information down to the younger generation and to those that are interested. Some of these stories that were mentioned today, they're not documented. They're not referenced in any professional literature. And so we have to capture that. And that information should belong to the Navajo Nation and Navajo people.
Events leading up to the June anniversary of the treaty signing include a more than 400-mile run from Fort Sumner, New Mexico, to Window Rock, Arizona, to mark the return home. The treaty will also be on display at the Navajo Nation Museum during the month of June. The Democratic Caucus of the House Natural Resources Committee has selected Representative Ruben Gallego as the new ranking member of the Subcommittee on Indian Insular and Alaska Native Affairs. The congressman from Arizona has knowledge of tribal communities and replaces Representative Norma Torres, who recently resigned to serve on another committee. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
The Dartmouth Powwow returns Mother's Day weekend with singing, drumming, dance competitions, and more. The Dartmouth Green, Hanover, New Hampshire, May 12th and 13th. Planning info available when you Google Dartmouth Powwow. Support by the Dartmouth Native American Program. Support by the 35th Gathering of Nations Powwow. An enchanting evening is yours at the Miss Indian World Traditional Presentations Thursday, April 26th in the Kiva Auditorium, Albuquerque Convention Center. Tickets available online and at the door.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful?
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your Wednesday host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guest is singer, songwriter, poet, activist, teacher, and lifelong Alaskan, Libby Roderick, and we're listening to her hit song, How Could Anyone, in the background right now. Libby, thanks for calling in today.
Thanks for having me.
Where are you now, Libby?
I'm in Anchorage. I'm in the middle, actually, of a very interesting community gathering about building community resilience.
That sounds great. But you'll be in the capital city pretty soon because you've got a big concert this Friday. So are you looking forward to that?
Very much so. I haven't played in Juneau in way too long, so this will be super fun.
And what do you love about coming to play in Juneau?
Oh, I love Juneau. I lived there for a while when I was a younger person. I love the ecosystems. They're so rich and this extraordinary. The community is solid and helps each other and is tied to the land and has all the also political and intellectual and creative things going on. And we just had Folk Fest. It's a grand, grand place.
I couldn't agree more. I'm also joining me in the studio is Linda Buckley. So I wanted to introduce her and let her say hello.
Yeah,
to our
Libby.
Listeners and to Libby.
It has been too long. Too long. But we're really excited. And, you know, there's a lot of buzz about Libby Roderick coming back to Juneau.
And Linda, who are you here representing?
Where I'm representing 350 Juneau, which is a climate action group. It's part of 350.org, Bill McKibben. And this is our one-year anniversary. We're celebrating by bringing Libby.
Happy birthday. Happy anniversary. Mm-hmm. All right, Libby, since you're a singer, songwriter, poet, activist, and a teacher, do you give your audience a little bit of all of that in one of your shows?
Well, I hope so. I mean, the reason I got on the road many, many, many years ago and do this is because I want to use music and humor and storytelling and information and whatever else we've got to help us all keep moving to protect and celebrate what we love. And as it happens, probably true for you all too, I love just about everything. So I just want to, you know, give everything we've got when we get together like that to inspire us to do whatever we need to do to take great care of our world.
And speaking of our world, you've got one of the most unusual claims to fame of anyone I've ever interviewed. One of your songs was actually played on Mars. How did that come about?
Well, the short version is a band in the East Coast covered one of my songs, and it was heard by somebody who works for NASA. And so NASA plays wake-up songs for all its astronauts, and they just decided that their little robot Spirit, which was searching for water on the red planet, also deserved a wake-up song. And so they picked this song called Dig Down Deep. And if you know why the theme would be picked for that particular use. And my big complaint, as I always say, is I've never seen any royalties. Nobody buys buys any albums on Mars.
Oh, my goodness. But how does it feel to have had an off-planet hit song? Not too many songwriters can say that.
That is true. Well, it's pretty amazing. I mean, it's pretty fun.
I'm sure when the Martians do come to Earth, they'll be you're the first person they're going to look up. And then the song we played before we started talking is also quite famous. How Could Anyone is the name of that. It's provided a beautiful and emotional soundtrack to some really impactful stories in the media. And I was wondering if you could say a bit more about that.
Sure. I mean, that has been a very interesting experience to be part of. I mean, it has become a phenomenon, and I feel like I'm sure people must when they witness a child or someone they know going off into the world and doing all these things. And I'm humbled, actually, to hear from people around the world the ways that they have used that song, from everything for work with cancer survivors to folks supporting gay marriage to people who are working with veterans to people in prison. And, I mean, it's remarkable to me. And I think the reason, I think, since it's a very short song with a very, you know, compact message, is that it speaks to the dual experience for most humans, which is, I think, underneath, somewhere in us, we know we're pretty darn great. You know, that we're good, we're smart, we're creative, we care, we're trying our best, we're, you know, loving as we can be. And simultaneously, we've been wounded, right? We've been wounded in a host of different ways, whether that is through racism or sexism or the fact that we're considered to be too large or too small or too this or too that, or you name it, right? Immigration issues. It goes on and on, the ways in which life has been very hard on people, society has been very hard on certain groups of people. And so I think the reason, the best I can figure as to why it's become this global phenomenon, is that it speaks to both of those things at the same time. Mm-hmm. In a way that's easy to get, easy to sing, and kind of speaks to the heart. So it's been very interesting, like I say, to me, and extraordinarily moving, you know, to see Zambian orphans singing this song, right? Mm-hmm. And hoping that it, you know, is healing for them.
Did you know or have a feeling when you wrote it that so many people worldwide would find it so touching?
Well, as is true, I've heard a couple other people speak about having something like this in their lives. It is exactly the opposite. Couldn't be more opposite. I wrote it very rapidly. I thought I actually took it to a singing circle that I knew of at the time. This was many years ago, of course, and said very apologetically, "I am so sorry. I only have the chorus to this song. I don't have the entire song to present to you, but I'll sing you what I've got so far," right? And I sang it, and the response was pretty sturdy. And so I thought, okay, maybe this is it. And I had no idea at all.
And that song, as well as your other music, has been described as very deep and compassionate. I'm sure many people have asked you this, but how did you become the musician that you are today? Where did you begin, and what happened along the way to help you achieve this kind of respect and admiration from your fans and your peers?
Well, no planning at all, I can tell you that much. I didn't intend to do it. I was, when I initially started out, so painfully shy, I had to force myself to go touring in the lower 48. I didn't want to particularly. I mean, all I can say is this. I think that whoever we are, if we dig down deep into sort of the heart and soul of who we actually are honestly, the hard parts, the easy parts, you know, the lovely parts, the less lovely parts, our whole selves, and then bring out whatever we have, other people resonate with it. And I'm saying that because I wasn't trained as a musician. I didn't intend to be a musician. As everyone will see, I'm not a master, you know, guitarist or anything like that. And so I attribute a lot of what I have to the extraordinary gifts of being raised around intact wilderness and ecosystems and traditional indigenous cultures, because I think that sense of wholeness has been probably the greatest blessing in my life. And I think music is an expression of wholeness. And when we sing and, you know, and so on, we feel that connection. So all I can say in that regard is that I think for all of us, right, authenticity and putting your heart out there with everything you have often resonates with others. And so,
yeah,
that's a beautiful sentiment and very well said. And because I have you as sort of a captive guest, I always ask musicians when I have them on the show, since I do a music show on one of our other stations, who are some of your favorite artists or musicians? Who are you listening to right now?
Oh, how interesting. Let's see. Well, as many people, I am wildly in love with the late vocalist Eva Cassidy. Just because, again, of the sort of pureness and authenticity of her voice and the way she interprets songs. I mean, she passed. She died before, you know, in her 30s, I think, from cancer. Also a woman who was painfully shy, and they almost had to, like, force her to perform in public. She has just an extraordinary voice. I'm a dance. I like to dance, like most people, at home, privately. So I have definitely, you know, tapes that allow me to do that for fun. Who else comes to mind? You know, I like a lot of crossover folks in the sort of country zone, like Lyle Lovett, people like that.
Great choices. Thank you for the recommendations. I'll be looking all of those artists up later. All right. And before we get to the details of the concert this Friday, because we are in the midst of our spring member drive, it's actually the first day of our drive, I wanted to ask you, Libby and Linda, too, what do you love about public radio?
Libby?
Sorry.
I adore it. I mean, as a traveling musician, as an independent musician, public radio is the lifeline for folks who don't want to necessarily be in hock to the commercial recording industry in those ways. You know, people whose music really is about community. And so everywhere I go, right, it is the lifeline, the lifeblood, the support for independent musicians. And that's, we really, really, really need that support for independent musicians to keep the diversity and creativity coming out that otherwise gets suppressed and eaten by the bigger industry, right? And obviously the other piece being these days, given what's happening, you know, I do believe we are in the most dangerous and, also opportunity for our democracy, let alone our species. And public media is the place, of course, where we rely on people to tell us the information as they see it, to be unbiased about that, to do the deeper dives of the investigative journalism kind of work, to, you know, just trustworthy information, like everybody says. And it's increasingly important in this weird time where, right, we have the alternative facts and we have all sorts of things on the internet that's hard for people to know what's true and what isn't, to have trustworthy folks doing that work for us. I am boundless in my appreciation.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Me too. Good job. Yeah, I was just going to say real quick, I remember Kim Heacock said we're a big state, but we're kind of a small village of people. And I got to hear Talk of Alaska on KHNS in Haines last week. And when I'm in Tanaki, I get to listen to Raven Radio. And when I'm in Juneau, I get to listen to KTOO. And now there's three channels here that provide all of this, wonderful information and all kinds of great music. So I'm endlessly. I give to all three stations, all five stations. I have a sweatshirt with KTO, a hat with Raven Radio anyway. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Super fans here today.
We're big fans.
Those are fantastic testimonials. All right, if you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Libby Roderick, who's going to be playing a concert here in Juneau on Friday, and also Linda Buckley from 350 Juneau. And when and where is the event? Let's talk details.
Well, it's at Northern Light this Friday, April 27th at 7 p.m. And the tickets are at the Jack in Hearthside until about 3 o'clock on Friday. And, well over half have sold. And I know people in Juneau are very last minute. We will have some at the door, but I really encourage people to go out in the rain today and tomorrow and get those tickets. And it's just, as you can tell from listening to Libby, I mean, it's so much more than music. It's story. It's poetry. It's everything from her heart. And it's been, I think, Libby, 20 years since you've performed here. So a lot of people are definitely happy you've come back. So thank you.
My pleasure.
And Libby, I found your website to be really terrific and informative. I learned a lot about you. Linda, does 350 Juneau have a website as well?
We have... I think we've got one that's being constructed. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/350Juno, and a Gmail account, and, you know, a website that's definitely being up and running soon.
All right. Is that the best place to get more information?
I think, yeah, I think basically if anybody wants more information that's not on Facebook or on Libby's, they can email me at lbuckley@gci.net, and be happy to fill them in.
Libby, before we go, or after we finish up talking here, I'm going to play Dig Down Deep. Is there anything you'd like to say about your concert, about anything else, or about Dig Down Deep before we go?
No, just would love to see people. I mean, I feel so strongly right now that these are challenging times for folks, and the more we can come together, the more we can sing together, the more fun we can have together, the more we can support each other and inform each other, the better we're all going to do. And concerts are a very fun way, I think, to do that. And I really support 350's work, so would love to see people.
And then there is a reception after, just a light reception, and Libby will be there signing her CDs and a chance to really meet the artist and talk to her and meet the 350 people.
Great. Thank you both so much for being here today. Libby, thanks for talking to me. Everybody go to her concert, 7 p.m. this Friday at Northern Light United Church.
See you, Libby.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye. Through me. I'm digging way down, down to the bottom of my soul. I'm digging way down deep. Yes, I am. I'm digging way down, down to the bottom of my soul. There's clear water running through me. Ain't got no answers, got a whole lot of questions, and nothing on the surface seems to satisfy me. Can't find it on the outside, got to feel it on the inside, and dig down deeper in the mystery. So I am. I'm digging way down, down to the bottom of my soul. I'm digging way down deep. Yes, I am. I'm digging way down, down to the bottom of my soul. There's clear water running through me. The terror strikes me in the middle of the night, and even arms around my body can't comfort me. My heart is thirsting for that cool drink of water. Got to pull out my shovel, get busy. So I am. I'm digging way down, down to the bottom of my soul. I'm digging way down deep. Yes, I am. I'm digging way down, down to the bottom of my soul. There's clear water running through me. Cool, clear water flowing through me, washing all my fears away. Cool, clear water flowing through me, moving me up towards the light of day. Daybreak finds me in the morning light, and it's hard to hold on to what set me free. I go down to the river 'cause it helps me remember to dig down deeper in my time of need. So I am. I'm digging way down, down to the bottom of my soul. I'm digging way down deep. Yes, I am. I'm digging way down, down to the bottom of my soul. There's clear water running through me. Yes, I am. I'm digging way down, down to the bottom of my soul. Way down deep. Yes, I am. I'm digging way down, down to the bottom of my soul. There's clear water running through me.
When you make a contribution to KTOO, you're really making a gift to yourself. Every penny raised during this campaign goes right back into creating all that you hear, read, and see from KTOO every day. Want to know what happens to your monthly $10 contribution? Turn on 104.3 or visit us on the web. That's your investment at work. If you've not yet given this spring or ever, give now at ktoo.org or at 586-3636. Thanks.
Are you ready to launch or grow a Southeast Alaska-based business? The Path to Prosperity is seeking innovative businesses and startups for the 2018 competition, where you'll receive award-winning small business support and the chance to win $25,000.
Join us on Tuesday, May 3rd at 5:30 p.m. for a free informational webinar. Visit spruceroot.org for more information and application instructions. This message is brought to you by Spruce Root Community Development and the Nature Conservancy.
It is 25 minutes after the hour. I'm your host, Shelley Dee, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon. Here with me in the studio is computational designer Dave Pygram. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Also, James Bibb is here from the Alaska Design Forum, and we'll be talking to both of them about tonight's lecture. Dave, you're the guest lecturer for tonight's Alaska Design Forum and founder of the company called Supermaneuver. So what do you do at Supermaneuver?
At Supermaneuver, we're architects, and we try to take on any kind of project that we've never done before and tried to bring computational design techniques together to try to produce innovative outcomes that combine the possibilities of perhaps advanced manufacturing, building things with robots, trying to make the path of the sun talk to the way the material concrete behaves, or all of these things combined with the more esoteric things in architecture, like what does the space feel like, how does the light move, should it be pointy or hairy or smooth or soft or any of these sorts of things. So we try to have as many different design inputs talk to each other as possible.
That's exciting. Whenever I have a guest on who's here to lecture for the design forum, I get so excited about the future. I just want this stuff to hurry up and get here. But some of it is here already. So I understand that one of the projects of your of Supermaneuver, one of the latest projects, I think it just finished up, is called, help me out with the name here, Nest.
Hilo Nest. Or Nest Hilo. It can go either way.
Hilo Nest. What's special about that?
So this is a really amazing project. It's one of those one-in-a-lifetime opportunities, I think. So it came about, there's a Swiss government materials research institute called EMPA, and they all the time are testing new materials like concrete or new insulation materials, aerogel or something like that. And they started to realize that the gap between what was happening in the lab and what could happen in the real world was really huge, and that they thought that was a shame. So they decided to figure out why. And the biggest reason they could find was that clients were unwilling to take the risk of being the first. And then no one else would do it because they couldn't point at where it had happened before. And they took the really remarkable step of just saying, okay, we're going to stop proving these materials and testing them, and we're just going to be the client, and we're going to go to our other friends who are doing great research and give them the chance to get their stuff out of the lab. So they came to a great colleague of mine, Philippe Bloch, in Switzerland, and they said, we know you're doing great work. We'd like you to try to demonstrate that with the building. And luckily, he'd just come and taught with me in Sydney, and so he invited Supermaneuver in to be the architects, and we worked with his research team, who are experts in structural engineering and structural optimization. He brought another research team led by Arno Schluter, who are experts in energy systems, and we had the job of making a completely novel two-story penthouse apartment building with a new way of making an extremely thin, one-inch thick concrete roof, with having robotically actuated photovoltaics that track the sun and watch the users, and a whole other set of innovations, really in order to show off and to prove that these things really are possible.
Thermally active, energy-generating concrete. It doesn't even sound like it could be real or that it could even be called concrete. Pretty impressive. All right. So I know your work has been exhibited around the world. What kind of work are we talking about when they say your work's been exhibited in Venice, Beijing, other places in Europe, New York? Are we talking about architecture or something else?
In most cases, they're what typically would be called paper projects, although in our case you might call them pixel projects, so self-initiated projects that show the capabilities of new design processes. So in Beijing, we've shown ways of thinking about growing a skyscraper where the path of the sun influences the structure, and you come up with a very innovative self-structuring atrium through the middle of the building. In Venice, we were included as one of the examples of new forms of architectural practice, so new ways that design offices are structuring and operating in the world. And there we made a more than 1,000 unique piece robotically rod-bent steel installation, which I'll be showing tonight. and collaborating with people from Michigan. And so we're showing that as a really small firm with the kind of global network, you can do things that you could not otherwise do.
So in addition to creating and to traveling, you're also a teacher. Are you still teaching at the University of Technology in Sydney?
That's right. Yeah, both my business partner and I have full-time teaching positions there, and we're lucky enough that the school really supports the office and allows us to work out of our office with even our employees for our commercial practices. We embedded completely in the university. We've recently just set up a robotic fabrication lab there, so we have actually really incredible facilities to start continuing these experiments in a sort of seamless manner between the academic institution and the real world.
That is so exciting. So, boy, the future's wide open for you. What's next on the horizon for Supermaneuver?
We've just started to do much bigger competitions. Literally last week, we submitted for a 25-story residential tower in a part of outside of Sydney called Parramatta, where there's a huge shift. The scale is really going massive. This is a really strange project. They're putting a 25-story tower right next to a 2-story heritage building, which is an absolute conflict. But thankfully, they've had the enlightenment to see that this is a challenge that we need to address properly. So they've held a design competition, got a whole bunch of different people to think about. And so our answer is to try to not let the tower touch the ground, and in fact to have a 3-story void and a park so that all the people in the small buildings look out at a park, at a new public space, and there's a tower floating above. So we present that next week, and hopefully we'll get the chance to deliver not just a shocking change in scale, but actually a new type of public space for people to enjoy.
How exciting. And what do you plan to cover in your talk tonight?
Tonight I'm going to talk across the range of how we think about computational design. So from fictitious projects where we're making computer programs of little mini Le Corbusiers running around and trying to solve housing, a megastructure in New York, extremely fictitious, the way we use almost exactly the same set of algorithms to, we've been working with a startup technology company on super energy efficient lighting, all the way through to, that Swiss project with the very thin roof and that generates 150% of the energy that it uses. So really a big spectrum, but mostly talking about the design process.
Sounds like a great presentation. Now, you don't sound like you're from around here. Have you had a nice time in Alaska so far?
I've been loving it, yes. I have to say I've never had such friendly hosts and such generosity, and people are so welcoming. And coming from Australia, we really like the bush, I guess, is what we would call it. So it's fantastic to see such incredible wilderness really on everyone's doorstep. So I'm very excited. I'm very sad that I'm here for such a short time. It's definitely tempting me to come back.
Oh, good. Well, I hope that you do. I've started this tradition of asking all of our visitors from the Design Forum this question, since everyone I speak to is so innovative and ahead of their time. Have you encountered anything in Alaska that you've never seen or heard of before, technology related or otherwise?
Absolutely. Yeah, I was lucky enough to be taken to the museum in Fairbanks yesterday, and I saw a lot of incredibly finely crafted and ingenious Native or First Nations outputs. And probably the thing that was most exciting to me were these special sunglasses with a really horizontal slit and incredible formalism at the same time as this solution to what must have been a horrible problem of snow blindness. And so that was the one that stood out to me.
That's a great example. All right. And the website, Supermaneuver, is the best place to find out more information about you and your work, yeah? It's not spelled exactly as it sounds. So I think people might have to search a little bit.
Correct. Yeah, it's the French spelling.
The French spelling. Thank you.
And in fact, when we first bought the domain, if you typed it into Google, it would say, "Did you mean Superman lover?"
Superman lover.
So I think we lost half of our potential visitors.
I'm sure either way you go on that one is going to be fascinating. All right. James, can you tell us a little bit more information about tonight's talk in the Alaska Design Forum?
Yeah, tonight's talk at 6 p.m. at 360 North, and it should be good. It's raining outside. I think the last time we were here, it was a sunny evening, and so the challenge of bringing people in on a sunny evening, and it was sunny evening and folk festival.
Oh, wow.
So tonight,
tonight
is a nice, cozy evening. So at 6 p.m. at 360 North, it'll be about an hour-long lecture, and you're more than welcome to come along and listen to more.
Great.
Please do.
There's a lot of great details on the Alaska Design Forum's website as well. Thank you both so much for being here today. Is there anything else you'd like to add about your work or the lecture or the design forum?
Nothing other than to say I think this Alaska Design Forum is really a fantastic initiative. I wish I was here for all the previous lectures, and I'm really proud and excited to be speaking for them.
The Automata series has been really wonderful, and I've been very lucky to speak to all the guests, including you. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
How are things on the West Coast? I hear you moving real fine. You wear those shoes like a dove. Now step those shoes, we'll go roaming in the night. But how are things on the West Coast? You keep it moving to your soul's delight. Now I've tried the brakes. I've tried, but you know it's a lonely ride. How are things on the West Coast? Oh, I'd move heaven behind those eyes. Today my heart swims. Yet today my heart swings. But I don't want to take your heart, and I don't want a piece of history.
Excited to announce that NPR correspondent and host Melissa Block will be doing a special event with KTOO. Join us May 9th at 7 p.m. at the Jack to hear stories from her reporting travels around the world that reveal intimate insights into people's lives. Melissa will share a behind-the-scenes look at the craft and joy of radio storytelling. Only 300 tickets are available. Purchase yours at ktoo.org. This event with Melissa Block is made possible with support from LifeMed and Bartlett Regional Hospital.
For just $5 or $10 a month, you can sign up for a year's worth of KTOO. During our spring member drive, we're encouraging you to take a few moments of your day to renew or start your membership. The on-air campaign is just a few days this week, and the messages are brief. So we hope you'll stop whatever you're doing to renew your membership, make an additional gift, or sign up for the first time. Just go to ktoo.org or give us a call at 586-3636.
It is about 22 minutes to the top of the hour. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are here to talk to us about the Alaska State Improv Festival, so I did not prepare at all for this interview.
Front row.
Welcome to the show. Mike, Eric, and Jonathan, let's talk to each of you a little bit about your background. And Mike, we'll start with you.
Yeah, sure.
This is your first time, fifth time performing at the festival.
Alaska State Improv Festival.
And how long have you been doing improv?
Oh, I've been doing improv for about 10 years now. I started in New York, where I currently live, started a few different theaters down there, and just around the world, it's kind of been like one of those weird journeys that I wound up in Juneau, and I met Eric, and I met Jonathan in Hawaii, 2 years ago?
Yep.
And yeah, it's just you make connections and meet people, and it's you learn from everyone, and I love it.
Awesome. And Eric, how about you? You're our local person.
Yes.
But you have recently performed in London. What was that like?
Oh, I went over for the Slapdash International Improv Festival. We had 9 performers from 6 different countries being directed together for a week. And what was amazing about that, when I perform in Juneau, I'm worried about the production of the show, making sure that we have the venue, getting all of the marketing out. And in London, all I had to do was show up and know that I had all these talented people around me and a director and producer and all this whole team surrounding me and just being able to walk out and think about performing and nothing else.
Nice. I bet that was a little bit of a load off. And last but not least, Jonathan Pitts, producer of the Chicago Improv Festival for 20 years. That's quite a claim to fame.
Well, thank you.
Is this your first time in Juneau?
It is my first time in Juneau, my first time in Alaska, first time at the As If Fest. So it's great to be here.
Cool. I got 1 year on you because I was here last year.
So you are winning.
So, yeah, I attended the festival last year and I had a great time, but I totally had some questions about the methods of improv comedy. So what are some things about performing improv that the average person might not know that you want them to know?
I would say that it is easier and harder than it looks. And I know that's a contradiction of terms, but part of it is easier once you learn the craft of it and stop trying to be funny.
So you don't try.
Yeah, no, you don't try to be funny. If you can sit there and really learn the crafts, which and the basics are a thing called yes and, which is learning how to accept what's been said and building off of it. And if you get good at listening and if you're good at give and take, then you start getting pretty good at improv, whether or not you're doing games, scenes, or what we call long form, you know. And it is harder because the hardest thing to learn to do is stop being in your own way. And then once it gets easier, it can get pretty easy. Now, for the audience that's coming to see a show, they don't have to work as much as us. They just have to show up and have fun.
Yeah, we got the easy part.
Yeah.
the really easy part. We really don't have to try. What about you guys? Do you have anything to add to what Jonathan was saying?
Eric?
Well, I think of TJ and Dave, one of the best known improv duos in the country. They start every show with, "Trust us, this is all made up." Part of how that comes about is that we as performers, I've had people say to me, "Well, why are you having improv practice? How can you practice improvising if it's all on the spot?" Well, you practice all the skills that make it when you walk on stage, that it's all natural, that you're able to walk into the moment and react, respond, do everything that you need to do on stage to be in tune with the audience, with the people on that stage. So it can look like something's been planned for weeks in advance, months in advance, when it's really coming out of that moment that you're all sharing together.
I would say for me, it's about fun. I love having fun. I've always been one of those like silly children in school that just always wanted to be the class clown and center of attention. And as an adult, that still hasn't left my system. So it's such a great outlet that we get to play pretend and in front of people, that it's something enjoyable enough that people actually want to come out and they want to be part of it. And as an audience member, there's kind of no way that you can show up to an improv show and not be part of the show. Not to say that like it's a scary or intimidating experience. It's not. It's fun. Like, you actually get to see your ideas and your concepts being brought to life on stage and actually see grown adults doing weird, silly, bizarre things you never would have pictured anyone doing before. And it doesn't always have to be that, but one of the things that improv really taught me is like how to work with people. So it has like stage applications, and it also has like offstage applications, like how to deal with regular people. Like, I live in New York, so all of my analogies are subway related. So you see somebody on the subway.
Not going to go over too well.
I know,
here,
right? You have a subway system here, right? Subterranean transit.
Wait, so then what was I on last night?
Drugs, Jonathan. The correct answer is drugs.
Thank you.
Okay.
Shouldn't have eaten the pink salmon.
It was an elephant.
Oh, right.
All right. Well, you guys are good. That's a great little preview of all the laughs to come. So let's talk about the festival now. Who are some of the troops that are going to be performing this weekend? I know there's a lot of out-of-towners in addition to some local folks.
Oh, yes. There's absolutely a lot of out-of-towners. As far as the local folks, we have our local Steamprov Action Adventure Group, Cogs and Goggles. And Early Walker will also be performing. They'll be opening up the formal festival tomorrow. We also have a pay-as-you-can preview tonight at 6 p.m. at McPheeters Hall to raise money for equipment replacements and security upgrades. Some of the out-of-town groups include I Love Musicals, which is a takeoff on I Love Lucy, but in a musical format. We have the All-Girl Review out of Los Angeles, California, which are all Hollywood actresses and writers. Jonathan, you know some of those women personally and have for a long time.
Yeah, the All-Girl Review has performed a couple times at the Chicago Improv Festival. There's a couple friends of mine, Dee Ryan and Jane Morris, who are Second City alumni who are part of the company, and they are a super talented group, and they're all female, and they are just killer good.
I'm looking forward to seeing them.
Yeah, they're going to rock.
All right. And I know there are – oh, no, sorry. Before we get to dates and times, you can't have a festival around here without some workshops. Am I right?
So yes. Tell me about those. That is correct. Jonathan's actually leading three of those.
Yes. So choose a date and time. Come by. Take any one of the workshops. Look at your schedule. See when you're available. Come on by. Have some fun. Learn why Mike Brown says it's so much fun.
It's so much fun, you guys. Come do it.
We have workshops from everything from Shakespearean improv to being in the moment to how to play an antagonist. And the way to really check out those workshops, see what's offered, is to go to our website at asifest.com, click on the four improvisers link, and it will show you all the descriptions and times and prices for those workshops.
I love the acronym for this festival. Okay, so there's a lot of dates and showtimes starting tonight, as you said, the pay-as-you-can preview, going on for the rest of the week and the weekend. So can we run through them just once for our listeners?
Absolutely. Tonight at 6 p.m. is the pay-as-you-can preview at McFeeters Hall. After that, Thursday through Sunday, we have shows at McFeeters Hall at 6 o'clock and 8:15. Then Friday and Saturday, we have late night shows in addition to the McFeeters shows down at the Hangar Ballroom. Those are 21 and over shows. Our entire schedule is online at asifest.com, and that will show you all of the acts, who's performing when, descriptions of each of the shows. And also, it's the only place that you can purchase an all-festival pass if you want to go to every single set at a steep discount.
Mm-hmm. That's a great suggestion. I actually didn't know about that. So thanks for all the information. Anything else you guys want to add about the festival or the art of improv or any random fact you want to throw out there before we wrap up the interview?
Oh, I'm sure Mike has random facts.
Random facts. I can talk about bees all day long. But one of the things that I love specifically about this festival, which is why I've been here, this is my fifth festival. The networking, even if you're not an improviser, even if you're not a comedian or a thespian or whatever, you can still come out and network with people literally from around the world. And how much of an opportunity do you have to do something like that, like on a daily basis? It's such a I say once in a lifetime. In some cases, it kind of is a once in a lifetime opportunity just to sit down and talk with comedians and just people from around the world and hear their experience and their stories and just see some really funny. I was going to swear, but I won't. I'm sorry.
This is public radio.
It's okay. You caught yourself.
I totally did.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. I'm a big fan of the Alaska State Improv Festival, starting tonight, going through the whole weekend. Check out the website for more information. And you heard it here on a Juno Afternoon. It's a very unique festival and very funny.
Thank you so much for having us here.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
This is Bird Note. Sometimes in the spring or summer, you might come across a young songbird that's just left the nest. It's a fledgling, fully feathered, but with wings and tail still looking a bit stubby. Fluttering furiously on those short wings, it flies a short distance to the safety of a nearby bush. Like a toddler, it's unsteady, awkward, and learning the ropes. It may look like this young bird has left the nest too soon. In the case of the black-capped chickadee, just 16 days after hatching. But there's an adaptive advantage for nestlings to exit the nest as soon as they are able, even if they're not quite ready to fend for themselves. A nest full of begging young can be a target for a predator. Rather than risk the whole brood to a raccoon or snake, adults may feed the young, one stashed here, one there, in greater safety as they toddle from shrub to shrub. By about the 10th day after the young leave the nest, though, chickadee adults stop feeding them and may even turn aggressive, meaning it's time for the youngsters to disperse and feed themselves. At this point, they're fully fledged, should have their full set of flight feathers, and be ready to take to the skies. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein. Support for BirdNote comes from Audubon Park Wild Bird Food, welcoming the return of songbirds with full feeders. Spring bird feeding tips at audubonpark.com.
My name is Heather Hardcastle, and I was born and raised here in Juneau. I remember the first time listening to K2 was probably around age 5 or 6 when I was in the shipyard with my dad. He always had it playing when we were working on the fishing boat before the summer season, so it definitely has always felt a part of the family. Membership is critical. Admittedly, I didn't become a member until we moved back to Juneau and I was closer to my late 30s. And so I had gone almost my whole life and knew that my parents contributed, but I hadn't personally for my early adult years. And I felt a bit of guilt about that. But now it's, as a sustaining member, it just feels good to be able to contribute in that way. So it's really an honor. If you have never given to KTOO in the past, why don't you start now? Your contribution is so essential. Give at ktoo.org.
The KXLL Pop-Up Record Shop is back, and we need your records to make it happen. Spring cleaning? Donate your used rock, soul, reggae, comedy, country, and folk records to KTOO. We're now accepting LPs and 45s, Monday through Friday between 9 and 5 p.m. The Pop-Up Record Shop returns Friday, April 27th, 5 o'clock at Amalga Distillery.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my final guests are here to talk about Willow and Luna at Shoofly. Welcome to the show, Erin and Eileen.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Erin, can you help me with your last name, please?
Yeah, Fagal and Ethan.
I never would have got that.
No, it's fine. Me neither.
So you are the owner and the maker at Willow and Luna. That is your company. Beautiful name, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Tell us what you do there.
I make handmade leather and fabric bags.
What inspired you to design and create bags, first of all? Are you yourself picky about the style of bag that you use?
Extremely picky, which is why I make my own. But I started after the birth of my son in 2014. He was about 6 months old, and I wanted to sew us stockings for Christmas. Had no idea how to do that. Bought my first sewing machine, and it kind of all started from there.
Wait, how long ago was that?
Like 3.5 years ago.
Wow, because your bags are amazing. I mean, they're very, very well made. They're beautiful. So you went from, like, sewing stockings to making these amazing bags.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very impressive. And where did the name Willow and Luna come from?
So my husband is in the Coast Guard, and we bought our first house, and it was on Willow Street. And Luna comes because I used to only work at night because I had a newborn and then a baby and then a toddler.
Wow.
So, you know.
And you taught yourself to sew.
And I taught myself to sew. You know, not busy enough.
That's really, really cool. And then I just wanted to ask a quick question about your materials. You do leather and canvas. And where do those come from?
Yeah, so I really like the play of textures on my bags. So, you know, I'll bring in a cute canvas print or a cute, like, quilting cotton print just to mix with the leather, just so that you have something that's unique and different than what everyone else has, because you don't want a bag that, you know, your next-door neighbor has. You want one that fits you. So that's kind of where that comes in.
Totally. And so, Eileen, you're with Shoofly Alaska,
yes.
And Shoofly will be hosting a pop-up show, which is what we're all here to talk about today, actually, is you're going to be selling some bags. Is a pop-up show a good way to describe what's going to be happening on Friday?
Yeah, so every final Friday of each month, we have a new local artist to showcase Juno talent and the amazing, cool things you could find here locally and just, you know, celebrate creativity. And so this month we're lucky enough to have Aaron at our Shoofly studio in the Valley. So it's right next to the Valley Restaurant. And so we have, yeah, lots of fun. And we're also bringing out a new collection of shoes and clothes ourselves, and actually even brought one in to the radio studio.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I love it.
It's a super cute 2-inch, very wearable pink decode heel with a ribbon tie on the front. And so we'll have those shoes there. They're super comfy and oh so cute. So along with checking out fabulous, wonderfully made leather bags, you can try on fabulous, wonderful leather shoes as well.
That sounds like the best of both worlds.
Truly.
And Final Friday, is this kind of a new occasion? I know about First Friday, but Final Fridays I'm not so familiar with.
Yeah, so as we know, downtown we always have the First Friday, but in the Valley we always have fun with a Final Friday. So, different businesses will host different people or have little shows or music. And so we're just joining in that fun new tradition of a Final Friday.
I like it.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, never enough Friday events. So, Aaron, back to you. I found you on Etsy and Amazon Handmade and Facebook and Instagram.
500 ways, yes.
But your website really blew me away. It's gorgeous, and so are the bags. I got really excited when I saw them. So is this the place to find out more about you and your work? And also, can we order online? And also, do you do custom jobs?
Yes, so I take custom orders, either Instagram, Facebook, or the website. And then on the website, I kind of set it up so you could build your own custom bag. So you could pick whatever fabrics or all leather bag you would want. And then if you're local to Juneau, I deliver it with my toddler, which is always fun.
Oh, that would be a nice little
I know, right? Messenger boy.
Yeah, and Shoofly, don't feel left out. I love you and your shoes. And your website is also a fantastic place to get information. And I also want to mention I love the quotes of the day. They're really funny. So if you have a computer or a smartphone handy, check out Aaron's website, Willow and Luna, and check out Shoofly's website, especially the quotes of the day. So thanks for being here. Is there anything else you guys want to add about the show or your bags or anything I didn't ask you that you want to mention?
No, but come see me so I'm not standing there by myself, guys. No, just kidding.
I don't think you have to worry about that. Your bags are great, and I just love the way they look. And so thanks for being here and telling us all about the pop-up show. And good luck.
Oh, thanks. Awa, 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 try it like a leg on charm. Awa, awa, for the sins of wind is an arm charm. Awa, awa, Sibona, Wense, Gaganja. Awa, awa, Amandum Basane. She's a rich girl, she don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soles of her shoes. He's a poor boy, empty as a pocket. Empty as a pocket with nothing to lose. Sing ta-na-na, ta-na-na, ta-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Ta-na-na, ta-na-na, ta-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. 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 Thank you for tuning in today to a Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, Scott Burton hosts, learn how to become a nurse through the University of Alaska Southeast, and hear more about your chance to run, covered with rainbow colors, over the streets of downtown. We'll preview this Saturday's Ella Fitzgerald tribute concert, and we'll hear about graphic novels, live drawing, board gaming, and costuming. Get the inside scoop on the Alaska Robotics Mini Comic Convention. Also, plan your weekend with Arts Up, a summary of all the capital city's arts and entertainment opportunities. That's tomorrow live at 3 on KTOO. Today's show can be found on KTOO.org. Have a great Juno evening.